It's February 17th, 2022. We'll call to order the Technology and Reform Committee. And I'm the chair, State Senator Mark Curran. Today before us, we have really a presentation from Department of Health and Human Services looking at the all of their IT infrastructure plans based on their current proposals in the supplemental budget request. And so we'd like to go, Mr. Commissioner Johnson, I do appreciate it. I looked through the initial part of it. Covers a lot of the great details that we're looking for. So if Commissioner Johnson, if you'd like to start out, we can go. I think you have a, Ms. Radke is here. So I don't know who's gonna handle what portions of the presentation, but Commissioner Johnson, if you please state your name and your position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chuck Johnson. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and thank you for the opportunity to be here and share with you both where we're at in terms of our IT infrastructure and our plans going forward. I do have a PowerPoint that I believe we're going to have projected here for Mr. Zempel. Great, thanks. I'm going to start us out and I'm going to come back in the middle and finish us up, but I also have a couple of folks I'll introduce as we go forward through the presentation. I lost the presentation. Let me start in with my introduction as we're getting the PowerPoint back up. You can go to the next slide. What we'd like to talk to you about today is where we're at with our human services IT and where we need to go. Like most states, human services is a highly IT dependent set of services and benefits. And in Minnesota, of course, because we are a county administered state supervised state, the counties also have a same dependency on these IT systems. And increasingly we're seeing tribal governments, many of whom are also delivering human services directly to their communities with the same dependency on our IT infrastructure. Go to the next slide. I'm gonna introduce Mr. Paling in a minute to walk you through the current systems that we have, wider systems that we have supporting DHS IT infrastructure. I wanted to walk you through some scope matters as a way of introduction. Our agency, DHS's annual budget, if you include federal dollars, is about $22 billion. It's a very large agency, multiple hundreds of programs. And as you can see here, the systems that we have are used by over 30,000 county, tribal, and state workers, as well as over 400,000 healthcare providers. And we touch about 1.7 million Minnesotans during the course of a year, or right around 30% of Minnesota's population. These large systems are complex, but they form a backbone around the major functions of human services, determining program eligibility and enrollment, ensuring program integrity and compliance, managing data, as well as paying for services in multiple ways through multiple systems. We also provide direct care and support to 13,000 clients through our direct care and treatment. And we have over 375 applications within the agency. The ones we're going to talk about today are the larger ones as way of introduction. Our budget for operating IT is a little over $200 million. If you put projects in there, I think it's more in the range of about $250 million. And so that gives you a sense of the scope here. Per the committee's request, we did want to share with you where we're at with our existing infrastructure. And I'd like to turn it over now to Greg Paling, who's the Chief Business Technology Officer at Minute Serving DHS. And Greg will walk us through this part of the presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Johnson. Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you for having us here today. As Deputy Commissioner Johnson said, I'm Greg Paling. I'm the Chief Business Technology Officer for Minnesota IT Services that supports DHS. Today, I'm going to provide some information on four of the Department of Human Services major legacy systems and a brief status update on each of them. First of all, here we're looking at the first system is the Medicaid Management Information System, known as MMIS. It was launched in 1994. MMIS is a system of record for member coverage, provider data, service authorization, third-party liability, and payment data. It stores 3 years of online billing history and features more than 240 online screens. MMIS provides all federal and state funded health programs support for all those programs. The functions that are included in this are provider enrollment, claims processing, provider payments, third-party liability programs, member, provider, and county and tribal support. Some of our partners include the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, counties and tribes, healthcare providers who serve medical members, and DHS contracted health plans. MMIS annually processes approximately 37 million fee-for-service claims, 50 million in counterclaims, and 28 million capitation payments to managed care organizations. DHS, this past 12 months, DHS paid approximately $14 billion as a B, in payments to over 100,000 enrolled providers, counties, tribes, and MCOs. This is the system that serves the most Minnesotans. It serves approximately about 1.5 million Minnesotans. Moving to the next slide. Next, we have the MAXIS system, which is the eligibility and case management system for cash and food programs, and some healthcare programs are still in it also. MAXIS is the oldest of our legacy systems dating back to 1989. Over the past 30 years, it has provided timely, accurate processing and consistent policy application. It's a rock solid database is what I'd like to say. Our partners include the counties and tribes, the Food and Nutrition Service, the federal government's Food and Nutrition Service known as FNS, the Health and Human Services Office of Family Assistance, CMS again, the Social Security Administration, and the IRS. We have data interfaces with over 48 agencies and other applications with MAXIS, very complicated. Some of these interfaces include with our PRISM system or SSI system and MMIS. It also includes counties like Ramsey County, the Department of Economic and Employment and Economic Development's Workforce One are also included in that. Moving to the next slide.
Mr. Palin, yes. If you could, on each of those as you describe those, could you please provide, you've gone through MMIS and MAXIS, please highlight whether that was a homegrown we built internally or was provided as a part of a contractor solution?
Sure.
If you could lay that out, thank you.
Yes, Chair. MMIS, the MMIS system was built, is what I would call a build. It's a homegrown, and the MAXIS system is also a homegrown build. The PRISM system that I'm going to talk about now is also a build. I mean, we had contractors work with us to build it, but we build it and we maintain these three systems. So moving to PRISM, PRISM supports enforcement of child support orders by helping to locate missing and non-custodial parents, implementing automatic income withholding with employers, and enforcement of the child support orders. PRISM also supports centralized receipting and dispersing of the child support payments that's required by federal law. PRISM has many interfaces with other large agencies and other state and federal agencies also. PRISM automates routine functions of locating missing non-custodial parents, implementing income withholding
recording in progress,
and enforcing child support orders. PRISM also initiates locate requests to several agencies and generating over 14,000 locate requests each month. Our partners again include the counties and tribes, the Health and Human Services Child Support Enforcement Division, and a big partner with DHS is in the counties is the state courts when it comes to child support enforcement. The child support, just a little side note, the child support payment center processes more than 200,000 payments each month. They receive the payments within 24 hours and issue the payments the following business day. This information is all uploaded into the PRISM system accurately and timely in order for proper case management. There are over 550,000 Minnesotans that are served by the child support program. We're talking children and families. Moving to the next slide is our most recent legacy system, which is METS. And that was done in partnership with IBM. We have a services contract with IBM. I would also call it a build, though. We bought a product that we have customized to meet the needs of Minnesota when it comes to healthcare eligibility. The METS system was launched in 2013 as part of the Affordable Care Act and serves as the backbone for the public program eligibility determination enrollment in Minnesota's health insurance exchange. It supports medical assistance for families and children, Minnesota care, and private health insurance enrollment and tax credit via MinSure. METS interfaces with other states, specifically MMI, with other state systems, I should say, specifically the MMIS system, and then Get Insured, which is a MinSure vendor, to provide necessary information for payment and coverage. The functionality is wide-ranging. It includes eligibility determination, electronic verification, case management, PERIAC data matching, which is a state mandate, interfacing with other states, reporting and consumer notices. DHS and county workers process renewals and update case information and respond to inquiries. Citizens can access the citizen portal to submit healthcare applications, review notices, and shop for private health plans. There's over a million Minnesotans eligible for DHS public health programs that use METS. And also more than 134,000 Minnesotans use METS to help enroll in the private health insurance programs. Moving to the next slide, recent accomplishments for these four systems include defining what is necessary to sustain these systems over the next several years to ensure they're secure and reliable. I would like to take just a second to point out that the MMIS, MAXIS, and METS systems, due to program decisions, are the systems that were most impacted by COVID and the related changes related to COVID. In other words, we've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years supporting DHS and policy program decisions and making changes in these systems to help support those programs. In the past couple of years for METS, we have been able to launch improvements to the interface between METS and MMIS that have resulted in significant improvements to performance and accuracy in the transmission of eligibility data between the two systems. Changes to handling of person records has significantly reduced the number of new duplicate IDs. The system also now has features to support remediation and reduction of existing duplicates. Also, improvements to data reporting capabilities have resulted in improved accuracy of federal reimbursement claims for the Minnesota Basic Health Plan or Minnesota Care. MMIS, plan changes to MMIS are made with an eye to modernization, including the second phase of the Minnesota Provider Screening and Enrollment and Pharmacy modules. We do have a roadmap for MMIS modernization that has recently been completed and is used to guide those activities. Additional work during the pandemic includes emergency changes to the pharmacy module for prescriptions, changing the refill times, adjustments to the Minnesota Care premiums and billings, and Minnesota Care renewals, all related to COVID. Moving to the next slide, as I stated a moment ago, MAXIS has been instrumental in delivering services to families, especially during COVID. An example is a pandemic electronic benefits transfer known as PEBT, food assistance to help families provide meals for their children who normally were at school, and adding the ability to communicate about those programs via text messages. We're doing a lot of texting now. Other notable improvements include automation for the Minnesota Supplemental Aid Program, new interfaces with the electronic disqualification recipient system, and Workforce One referral, a national and the National Directory of New Hire. Just a little bit about the Workforce One. Workforce One is a web-based client application used by nearly 2,000 state, county, and nonprofit employment and training providers to track employment and training services. There's now an interface between the Maxis system and those and the people helping people get jobs, which I my understanding is has been very helpful. Lastly, moving to Prism, the pandemic work included extending deadlines for participants to contest the changes to obligations. Improvements included parenting time adjustments to basic support, payment receipting improvements for participants' employers, and system enhancements and prioritized system fixes designed to increase county worker efficiency. And we have updated several of the external interfaces over the last year. That is my update on the four major legacy systems we support for DHS, Minute supports for DHS. As Deputy Commissioner Johnson stated, we have over 375 applications that we do support for DHS. I'm now just going to pass this back to Commissioner Johnson and Jeff Jorgensen to share some information about our modernization and transformation efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Peeling. Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Chuck Johnson, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Human Services. I can go to the next slide. We're going to talk now about where we're going and where we want to move forward based on the information that Mr. Paling shared about where we're at in our current systems and the scope of work that we need to support as a human services agency. And our objective is really to update on give an update on IT modernization, including an overview of the transformation legislation, which I know is an interest of this committee. Sometimes in the past, we've viewed technology as an end in itself. We need to modernize because the technology is old. I think what I'm going to lead you into, and then Mr. Jorgensen will take you through more, is trying to shift in thinking about how we improve service delivery from a consumer perspective and from the perspective of our partners in the counties and the tribes and how we use IT to support the vision of where we want to go. Go to the next slide. So the focus on improving service delivery is really about transforming the service delivery of human services in Minnesota. We have a lot of business processes and systems that are older. In some cases, our business processes are still based on paper. And you know that all of us know that in any other aspect of our life, we are rarely dealing with paper or don't have to deal with paper with very many of the people that help us, do our financial management and so forth. What we're looking for, and there's the three sub-bullets that are here, I think are really good sense of the kind of change that we're looking for, is no wrong-door access for people to services, ability to do things online, to share documentation online, and to integrate data to support service delivery and outcomes. Data is really critically important in human services, not just for us to be able to use at the policy level to understand policy, but also for the counties and tribes at the service delivery level to understand what is working and not working within their own counties and to use that data for improvement. We developed this vision working together with counties, tribal nations, and Minute. And we contracted with Gartner Consulting to help us develop the roadmap to achieve this vision. And that's the piece that we'll lead you through mostly today. Next slide. In our work with Gartner, they worked with us on what's really driving where you're trying to go. And clearly the first point that I've already made is, person-centered transformation of human services delivery, getting to this division. But we also know we have the reality, Greg just walked through it, outdated and antiquated systems, technology that don't talk to each other, make it difficult to provide services where people are crossing program silos because they're crossing system silos. And also, as I mentioned, to share data. We also, in some cases, are losing the expertise that we need to maintain our systems, and that becomes a critical point that we need to address in the nearer term. We also know, and we hear this a lot from legislators, certainly in human services committees, it takes a long time to make changes to our systems. Often when we want to make a program improvement, we will be telling the legislature, well, it's going to take us, 8, 9 months or a year to get that that change made because of the time it takes to make those changes in some of our older systems. And we also, of course, continue to focus on our own compliance requirements, as well as our role in providing direct care and treatment in secure settings. Next slide. The vision that we developed as part of this collaborative working with counties and Minute and tribes is all Minnesotans, from the people we serve to the workers to assist them, will have access to a full range of integrated person-centered human services that are supported by comprehensive, sustainable technology. We call this integrated services business model or integrated services delivery. We worked with a national organization as part of this process too, the American Public Human Services Association, that's really been helping support states as they've been trying to move toward this vision of more person-centered integrated services. And they were helpful in bringing ideas of what other states have done as well. This is really something we need to do together. It is not just about IT, it's also about program policy, and it's also about business process at the state level as well as at the local level. Next slide. So the vision for integrated services, as shown on this slide, is really in the goal, the access to streamlined human services delivery, having holistic and culturally appropriate services, really empowering people to be able to identify and determine what their own needs are, informing information and access for people as they're going through the process so they have control and access to their own data, and quality customer services throughout the person's experience. This is the vision that we gave to Gartner, and we asked Gartner, we need a roadmap for how to get there. What does it look like for us to pursue this direction that we want to go, addressing, obviously, as we're going through it, the need to modernize our technology for service delivery and also for stabilization and getting to future technology. So I'm going to turn the presentation now to Jeff Jorgensen. Jeff serves as our Business Transformation Officer at DHS. He's going to walk you through the specifics of the service delivery transformation proposal that is in the governor's budget.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Johnson. My name is Jeff Jorgensen. I am the Business Transformation Officer at DHS. And as Commissioner Johnson just shared, I'm going to walk you through highlight portions of the transformation proposal. So our proposal is requesting $77 million to continue the work that Chuck just described to toward an integrated person-centered experience for the people we serve. We estimate that we will be able to leverage additional federal funding for the initiatives that are described in the proposal. And we've broken the proposal down into five key initiatives. Before I get into the key initiatives, I just wanted to take a minute. This is a complex effort, and it is going to require change to both the software development methods that we've been using it and also the day-to-day service delivery. And so it needs to be planned carefully, and we need to do it using new ways of planning, and we need to evolve over time. Next slide, please. So a key component and the largest piece of our proposal is a set of recommendations from Gartner Consulting. And they provided us with a go-forward strategy and roadmap. And you'll see at the end of this presentation, there is a website with a link to all of the Gartner deliverables and materials from that assessment. So for some background, in 2019, our Enterprise Architecture Board, which is a governance group within DHS, Minute, counties, and tribes, requested an outside independent assessment of our modernization strategy. And in 2020, we contracted with Gartner to conduct the assessment. The assessment itself was a collaboration of interviews, documentation reviews, facilitated workshops with DHS, Minute, county, and tribal partners. The assessment was completed in the fall of 2021, and we feel it's fully aligned with recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology, specifically the modernization playbook that that group developed. Next slide. So the initial scope was to start with eligibility and enrollment. Gartner recommended we start with eligibility and enrollment because it touches virtually everyone supported by human services. It's the front door for most of our services. Eligibility enrollment is also full of pain points for both our consumers, our county and tribal nation workers. And so our approach is to tackle those pain points and improve the process for consumers and workers. Next slide. So our North Star, what we determined in our assessment with Gartner is that success of integrated service delivery of services and benefits no longer should be dependent solely on a single commercial off-the-shelf application or product. Instead, we should leverage multiple best-of-breed software tools and interoperating solutions that will help us enable our vision. We should leverage cloud technologies where possible, which will help us optimize and rapidly scale products and solutions. Next slide, please. So within the Gartner report, there are some execution principles that we think are really important, and that is that we need to work more iteratively and return value faster, which is aligned with the Blue Ribbon Council on IT, that we need to engage counties and tribes and our state partners as active participants and make incremental changes so we can deliver value faster. Next slide, please. Another key portion of this is that we will be partnering with multiple technology vendors to design and build applications that support this vision, using best-of-breed marketplace solutions and integrating them together instead of building all in one system. So we'll need to have a partner with a vendor to help us manage this effort and build in-house capacity to do so in the long term.
Mr. Jorgensen, if you could stop me there for that, a quick question there. So you just, your previous comment on the last page was moving away no longer depending on the best of breed contract providers. And then you just spoke about, which you only have one, I believe, or a couple, the primary one is Curum. And then you're speaking about the multi-vendor services. That just looks like you're moving back to and continuing on the build it in-house, just subcontracting out from a staff augmentation perspective. Can you clarify those last two statements or provide clarity for me, Mr. Jorgensen?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The vision here is to look at rent, buy, and build with each of the functionality that we would hope to deliver. And so we are not looking to build all of this functionality in-house, and we are not looking to build it with one solution, but rather go to market and use best of breed solutions for each of the pieces of functionality that we hope to deliver. So I apologize if I misspoke earlier, but the plan would be to, as we move forward with functionality, that we go to market and see who does that functionality, and then we bring that in, and we need to manage multiple vendors to do that, so we have an interoperable systems that are interoperable.
Mr. Jorgensen, and so with that then, so does that lead me to believe then that you're going to look for providers and vendors for the others outside of Curum, or in addition to replacing or looking for a new vendor for the Curum component for all the others, MMIS, Prism and Mets, or I'm sorry, Prism and Maxis?
Mr. Chair, I think with the proposal here, starting with integrated eligibility and enrollment, we would be looking for additional vendors as we bring on new functionality.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, there are foundational components to the recommendations from Gartner, and part of those foundational components are around building our organizational capacity to work differently. And that starts with dedicating resources toward integrated service delivery. We need to strengthen our vendor management capabilities and practices. If we're going to be working with multiple best of breed vendors to integrate multiple solutions, we need to strengthen those capacities. We need to create an enterprise architecture function that's business results driven, and have leadership with authoritative practice and client-centered services. And we need to establish a clear endpoint and track progress. Next slide, please. Another component within the Gartner recommendations are around planning and solution acquisition. So we need to spend time thinking about how we're going to build and use this solution. And we need to map our business capabilities to our desired outcomes and specific goals for the client experience. We need to understand the technical capabilities of our, not only within the state, but our county and tribal nation partners. So we understand what we already have and we can understand what we need to use and what we can integrate or what would be new. And so part of this review would be understanding the technical platforms and applications, whether they're vendor supported, the relevant sunset dates, and we need to map that to our business capabilities. We need to understand our technical capability within the counties and tribes in terms of how many staff they have, are they contracted, how much of that is outsourced. And then we need to look at our skill competencies in-house. Are we ready for this integration and the degree of compliance that would happen with an integrating and managing multiple vendors? And then finally, we have to have a plan for a competitive procurement strategy. Next slide. So finally, there's another set of recommendations around implementation and how we would plan to implement this product. I think the thing that we've learned through our engagement with Gartner is we need to demonstrate more rapid progress than we have in the last 6 years. And we need to align our work with the recommendations that are coming from the Blue Ribbon Council and the Modernization Playbook that talk about using agile project management and incremental deliverables with defined outcomes. And then we also need to deploy and think about maintenance and operations. We need to ensure there's a smooth transition away from development and integration to maintenance and operations so that we can move away from legacy technology with minimal disruption. Next slide.
Mr. Jorgensen, before you go on, so just a couple questions. Members, if there are any other questions, please make sure to raise your hand. Senator Hoffman, you'll be next. So you talked about the Blue Ribbon recommendations, and of course we agree with them. And one of the key components to me is, you know, do you intend to use the new procurement methodology, which by the way, very pleasantly surprised to hear we're doing well in minute, to deploy the invitation to negotiate and have great thorough conversations prior to contract signing for any of these vendors. Mr. Jorgensen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I believe that would be our intent, is to follow the recommendations as you described.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. And just a follow up. So when you talked about we have to learn we have to learn what the needs are. I'm assuming we should know what the needs are pretty well. And so one of the key things that I continually believe that we struggle with is how many of your business analysts and the existing agency personnel who manage the core systems are going to go out and work with the county. Not just, I know you've engaged them, which is great, but engaging them and bringing them into your office or having a Zoom meeting talking about requirements is one thing. The ability to articulate that in a written form and even in a conversation is very difficult. So what I'd love to see is the creativity finally reach forward that we're actually deploying our staff into all of those users you defined. I don't care the tribal areas, how they use in integrating and boarding counties. I can't tell you how many countless times I hear from counties about, you know, we got a green screen. What? We couldn't even provide them with a modern GUI interface. But really, to understand how they function and do their business. One thing is a translation of state law, which you guys have done in federal law, but really how do they operate and what are the behaviors? What they're actually the people with the feet on the ground and meeting with the people and the families and those of need. But you know, to hear stories of over and over that it can take 8 hours to board a family. And I know part of this program is to fix some of those hundreds of workarounds that they have to maintain and manage manually, but that family could be required to come in for the next day. Those are the things I want to hear about. How are we doing those things differently? Because, you know, right now I just see, yeah, we got some recommendations. Great. I love them. And the deployment of the Blue Ribbon Council recommendations and those components. But I want to hear more about what are you actually going to do differently in those areas that from what we've done for every other one of these programs, which has led us to where we're at today. Accumulation of hundreds, if not thousands, of change order requests that then move you to the initiative that we're going through right now. I think the root is we have to understand what drives the people as they use the tools and not just depend on somebody writing a document or you sending a consultant in there to write a document to try and translate it. They actually have to understand, live and breathe it. So to me, that's one of the most important components. So if you have some of them, I don't see them highlighted here. I know the consumer-centered, you know, well, that to me, that should have been the foundation. It's nothing new, but we haven't practiced that. So I'd like to hear those things. If they're not there today, again, please highlight them. Mr. Jorgensen, and then we'll follow up with Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having spent time in the counties myself, I can appreciate exactly your concern. I'm also happy to let you know that further in this presentation, we have an example of success. It's called MN Benefits, and it did exactly what you described. And I believe the intent with this proposal and the intent with working differently is for us to use human-centered design and to meet directly with counties and users to deliver that value incrementally. And Deputy Commissioner Johnson is going to share a little bit more about MN Benefits and why we see that as an example of success, but also an example of how we want to work differently as we implement other changes within eligibility and enrollment.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. And I appreciate the human-centered. I just want to make sure we're focused on the right humans. Thank you. And so with that, I'll go to Senator Hoffman with the question.
I'm glad you made the clarification, Chair Curran. This brings up the conversation of, you talk about the degradation of the dollar bill from the top down to the service provider, who's getting the service, right? And the national healthcare spending we know alone is $864 billion or $868 billion. And I was most relieved. Mr. Johnson validated what I knew the spending was on services in Minnesota across the line. But Mr. Chair, one of the things that we found through the National Academy of Medicine that 50% of that spending is really through billing and insurance, the BIR part of it. And that leads to this conversation. When this is nice that we're talking about this integration, we're talking about getting across platform, but what I'm not hearing, and you brought it with, is it person-centered? How are we doing two things? And I guess this is a question to you and your committee and how we're doing this is, self-direction, are we setting up a self-direction model, which there is, DHS finally put a tool that somebody can go in and within 30 minutes, they can find out if they're eligible for, assistance regarding food stamps, et cetera, right? They've simplified that. That's whoever set that up, Chuck, that's absolutely a game changer because, you know, the days of sitting for 8 hours trying to go through pieces of paper to try to figure things out is really old and it's time wasted. So to your point, Mark, is it self-direction? And the other one is, it's not so much about this integration, but is it provider automation? How much are you doing to look at what is provider automation that is going to be able to allow the individual to be able to self-direct their services or to be able to find the vendors and services? And then on the backside of it, are you setting up provider automation so that across the platforms, that's making that easily accessible. And that's, I think, the key there. And there's some work out there that I've sent you some information and I'll send you some more, but there is so on those two things, how much of, and Chuck, maybe you can answer this question, is are you looking at the provider automation side of it to make this truly a person-centered experience for people?
Excellent, thank you, Senator. Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry, Commissioner Johnson and or Mr. Jorgensen, who'd like to take that one?
Mr. Chair, I think I can help address that. This is Chuck Johnson, the Deputy Commissioner of DHS. Thanks, Senator Hoffman and Mr. Chair. I think that, yes, that is an issue that's on our list. I will say, and Mr. Jorgensen said, and I think I said it too, that we are starting with eligibility and enrollment. We're not starting with the provider side, but I agree with you that the provider side has its own inefficiencies. I think that the challenge here for us is how we do this in a way that isn't going to boil the ocean, right? I mean, this is a big part already, just trying to tackle eligibility and enrollment, and we haven't had a lot of success boiling the ocean. So that's part of, I think, why we want to make sure that we stay focused and that we're not spreading ourselves too thin early on. And partly it goes to what you said, Mr. Chair, is we have to learn this process. We have to learn the process of how you work in this more agile human-centered way, which, as you stated correctly, is getting feedback from consumers in an ongoing fashion on what's working and not working, as well as working closely, you know, not just with counties, but, you know, to go to the MS benefits experience, working with the frontline county workers. Talk to some of the county managers who are involved in MS benefits. They didn't really have that much to do with it. It was their frontline workers that were working directly with our staff and with the vendor that we were working with to get that feedback on what was working for them and not working for them, and to adjust and make it easier for the counties to manage their side of that process. So I'm not sure I'm entirely answering your question, Senator Hoffman, but I think we're not starting at the provider, but certainly have it on our list as another pain point within the system.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. And so with that, you know, the vendor community as well, we want to see and understand that we're not going to involve, and because modernization always looks great from our eyes, but modernization to a provider, a vendor that we automate, and I'm a big fan of automation, but meet them where they are, you know, and I think that's blended in your customer first message, but really meet them where they are. Standardization of rolling out a one size fits all electronic reporting tool a lot of those providers won't have the technology, and so. We need to continue to follow up on every aspect. What's the ultimate impact when we're done with everybody in that food chain? So, Senator Hoffman, did you have a follow-up?
I do, Mr. Chair, and you're driving home another point, that is services in this case, and thank you, Mr. Johnson, for talking through, you know, the process side of it, but in this case, services are still handed down to recipients by counties who are the, what, you know, and called lead agencies, and they authorize a provider who delivers those services based on that assessment. And then the recipient of those services, those prescribed services, are told that it's self-directed. See, there's a paradigm shift. If you could get that person actually being able to choose because you've now done a provider automation across the platform and through a menu of services, then it truly becomes person-centered. And so I think the challenge there is, how do we shift away from how we have done our old business for the last, you know, 100 years to how we really truly look at that? And I think provider automation is the only way to get to that. So I would encourage you, Mr. Johnson, to you know, when you're talking to the vendors, the gardeners, as consultants out there, or whoever you're dealing with, that they're specifically doing that or they're getting that, because it's not just doing business how we are consistently doing business or currently doing, but rather how should we be doing business to be more efficient? And then hence going back to the degradation of the dollar bill, instead of it being broken up multiple times by the time the individual with a disability or grandpa and grandma get those services, that they're choosing those services based upon that provider automation, and you're getting more bang for the buck. So there's more efficiency and you're getting a service delivery model that works well. I think that's the challenge. And I'd like to see that really happen, because then it crosses across all Department of Health and Department of Human Services. You could be a model. You could be a model doing this to the rest of the nation.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Commissioner Johnson, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman. I'm not as well versed in some of the processes around disability services probably as you are, Senator Hoffman, but you are describing, I think, some great opportunities for improvement there. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. And I think you have multiple willing partners on this committee that as you move in and try something new, you know, this is all about building the relationship and providing that trust level so we can further your creativity, the flexibility to deliver the services in a more timely manner. That's really the goal. So I think we're at Mr. Jorgensen. I think you're still up. So Mr. Jorgensen, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So continuing on with the proposal, project to product, I believe is exactly what we were just talking about here. And that is, we want to adapt more modern software development methods. I think, again, this aligns with the recommendations coming from the Blue Ribbon Commission to move away from these large agile or large waterfall projects and move into this iterative development. And so this is another key component of our proposal, and it is something that aligns with delivering value faster with less risk. So if we can make changes quicker and or stop quickly if something isn't working. Next slide, please. Another key component to helping us move forward is the expansion of cloud computing. Again, leveraging cloud computing will allow us, it'll set the foundation, the technical foundation for us to execute on our plan. This will allow us to enable things like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. And so this is a key component to helping us change how we do business and align to the Blue Ribbon Commission on Technology. Next slide, please. So it's going to take a while for us to fully transform, and we need to sustain our existing systems while we're doing that. We need to focus, our vision here is to focus on improve the client and caseworker experience where we have the highest inefficiencies. We also have a request for tools that will streamline and do server upgrades, replatform or rewrite selected systems as we move to modernize and add new functionality. Next slide, please. So this is the final portion of our proposal is around funding for maintenance and operations. So at any time you're building anything new, it's complex. And oftentimes the type of people or experience needed for development is different from maintenance and operations. And we need to be planful for how we move away from existing systems and then maintain them going forward. And so we've been very careful of thinking about the funding that will be needed to maintain and operate these systems as we move forward. And with that, I believe I'm going to turn it back to Deputy Commissioner Johnson, who is going to share an example of success and hopefully highlight some of the things that we're proud and that would align with other components of the proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Commissioner Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. An example, I've already gotten into this a little bit, an example of success in this transformation is MN Benefits, which is our new online portal that people can use to apply for 9 programs, food, all the cash programs, housing support, as well as child care assistance. This tool was launched statewide last fall. It came about as a result of a partnership with an organization called Code for America, who works with states trying to improve consumer service within human services. And they came to us looking for opportunities to work with Minnesota. They had worked on these kind of application portals in other states. And we got into this work with them, and it was done entirely during the course of the pandemic. And we think it's brought some great success. Go to the next slide. So MN Benefits is a mobile-friendly by design system, essentially portal that allows people to apply for assistance, as well as to upload documents, which is a critical part of the application process. A lot of documentation needed for verifications and so forth in our benefit programs, and this aids in doing that in a way that relieves the paper mail, walking into the office kind of stress that happens in our existing programs. Part of our challenge was we had an online application that we had developed, but it took people more than 60 minutes to complete on average. MN Benefits takes about 13 minutes. In 13 minutes, someone can go through and fill an application, get it into the county worker's mailbox, and go and upload whatever documents and so forth that they want to do that as part of that. This was developed in the way that we just talked a little bit about. Fully working in partnership with frontline county workers, frontline tribal workers, as well as with consumers, and getting feedback at each step along the way on things like, how's this question worded? We see people are getting a question wrong or stopping and dropping out of the question. Going back and getting feedback is a better way to word it, so we'll get the response that we're looking for and people can understand what we're looking for. We did over 50 releases in 2021. So when Jeff talked about the iterative process and doing it incrementally, based on feedback we get, we just make those adjustments as we went along, whether it was from the county workers, what they were seeing, either within their own business process or what they're hearing from consumers, or directly what the consumers were telling us was working for them and not. It also is translated into Spanish. We have an opportunity to go to additional languages. think it appears that I lost my PowerPoint runner, unfortunately. So I'll just walk through these next couple of slides. His Zoom froze up on him. So the next slide, and I hope you have this in front of you in some other form, but it really gives you a sense of some of the value that we've gotten out of this application, particularly around satisfaction and engagement, the state and quality of it, and the speed and adaptability, as I already said. We can see, we can get feedback one day, within a couple of days, have that feedback built into the tool. I'm much more responsive than the technology we work with in our old systems. Benefits is an example, in part because it's one of those inputs that we talked about earlier. We have been talking with a number of larger vendors across the country who work in IT space and support state government and other functions. And one of the things that I heard from one of them is when I asked, well, what other states doing? And I've heard this from other states as well directly, but is that we're kind of not in the mode anymore of the rip and replace. Take the big system, tear it down, replace it with another big system. We know we've gone through that in Minnesota. That's kind of what we did when we brought up METS to replace the Maxis part of Maxis that did healthcare eligibility, and we had our own problems with it, and we had the similar experience when we did MinLARS. Moving toward this kind of incremental, iterative, product approach, agile work allows us to mitigate that risk and to deliver value more quickly directly to consumer needs, directly to pain points, whether those are consumers or the companies. For example, we were talking yesterday, one of the pain points we've now identified, having done MN benefits, is on the back end to deliver as an application to the county worker. But the county worker still needs to take that application, go to the old Maxis system, and enter it in. And we've been talking about this prior to this too, but it's a good example. Well, there's a pain point. A direct interface between MN benefits and Maxis would resolve that. So that can be a next step that we consider as a way to, again, continue to improve the process so that we're getting rid of some of the steps that make it hard, not just for the consumers, but also for the county workers to provide the service that they want to provide and tribal workers to recipients. You can go to the last slide. This is a website that has a lot of the information for the work we've been doing around integrated services, a good resource to go to. In conclusion, I just want to say that we're, first of all, pleased to have the opportunity to share our experience here today and our plan going forward as represented in the governor's budget. We are we're looking for every opportunity we can to try to work to improve services for people in Minnesota, and to improve their experience, to improve their access, and to make it easier for them to manage their own services and benefits going forward. And with that, Mr. Chair, we're done and can take any additional questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. I appreciate it. I think you guys did cover a lot of the information we're looking for. The one thing that you just spoke about on MN benefits, which I don't think we've gone to this level of deep detail before, is so it works great for the individual seeking benefits, and that's great. My questions were, until your last comments were, okay, so what's that process look like? Because I was wondering, did they already have an existing relationship with the county? I think you clarified that. And then how or what type of real-time validation or identity validation, again, all those fraud, security, and protection things that we now have created a new channel for automation of, or more rapid fraud. But did you just say this application prints out or delivers an electronic application to the specific county, and the county worker then must follow the traditional same processes and procedures to do that enrollment? Could you clarify that, Commissioner Johnson, or whoever best can take that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. The consumer fills the application out on the portal, and this is how our old electronic application worked as well. And it delivers a application to the county worker's mailbox that they then take and do the entry into the system. I think from the county perspective, and I can't remember, Senator, if you were at the, Mr. Chair, if you were at the Blue Ribbon Commissioner, we did a longer presentation on MN benefits. We had a couple of county folks there as part of the presentation. What you hear from them is that they love this because The process now often requires a lot of back and forth with the client at the front end. And even though they still have to go through the old process of entering into the old system at the end, they're getting a clean application that's nicely organized. They can get the data in pretty quickly, and it's all kind of done in one step. And so you don't have that problem that you get sometimes where you have to go back and forth with the client. They can also get the uploaded documents and have those easily. And so the process is an improvement, but it's not the end goal, right? It's not ultimately where we want to be in terms of having application that is simple and easy and puts the data right into the system. In terms of program integrity, those steps still exist on the back end as the application comes into the county to ensure that the verifications are there, that everything's identified properly, and so forth. MM Benefits doesn't make that any better or worse one way or the other. Just delivers the data to the county to make those determinations.
Great, thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Yeah, I'm a firm believer, especially when we automate the tools and we can validate, right? The collection, the actual content is every required field entered. And so then you're validating that, the more we enrich that and through a full integration, identity and all those things, it gets much better for our personnel on the backside because they really should be working on complex cases. And that's what this automation does. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Senator Wicklund has a question, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. First, I just a comment about MIN benefits. I thought the presentation that we had with the county workers, it really emphasized how important it was to have the partnership with some pilot counties so they could have consistent interactions with the county workers to get feedback on how things should work or how they would like them to work. And I thought that work with Code for America really demonstrated a great process and hopefully can be used going forward, a way to get the end users involved closely in a project. But my questions, I guess one of them, Commissioner Johnson, you kind of touched on, when you look at other states and how they implement their services, do you have a sense of whether there's opportunities for us to be learning from other states as we work with vendors? Are there other solutions out there? I know every state is complex and Minnesota's environment is very different from other states in terms of how we deliver services, but are there opportunities that you've seen so far and are going to take advantage of going forward in looking across, what else is out there? And then I have one other question.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Wickman. We're certainly interested in continuing to be in communication with other states about what they're doing and learning from their experiences. We have had the opportunity at times to pick up ideas from other states and then modify them whatever fashion was necessary to make them work within Minnesota and our rules and so forth. It's, as you said, sometimes challenging because there are a lot of differences between states. We're a county-administered state. That's a little bit different. Every county-administered state is a little bit different from the other county-administered states as well. So it's a little bit of a challenge at time to figure out how we completely adapt from other states. I just would invite Mr. Palin or Mr. Jorgensen to add anything if they would like to add on this question as well.
Senator Wicklund, follow up.
Oh, I think he asked if Mr. Pulling or Mr. Jorgensen had any comments. I don't know to answer that question.
Commissioner Johnson, your audio sometimes comes in gargled. We're gonna have to get you a modern internet connectivity at your home. So, Mr. Palin?
Yeah.
Or Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, senators. Yes, I would say that we take every opportunity right now to learn from other counties or other states, excuse me. And a lot of that happens in a variety of ways. We have some connectivities with other states to learn what they're doing and stuff. And then also the vendor community is very helpful there to the chair's comments earlier about working with vendors. We're really trying to focus on looking at renting and buying before we build. And so the vendor community is very helpful in connecting us with other states and then we'll have discussions with those other states with the vendor involved and then with the vendor not involved to find out what's going on. And we're learning a lot from that, and that is helping us build our plan to move forward. And is very beneficial. The one point that Commissioner Johnson made is very important to keep in mind is we're county administered, where a lot of the other states are not, but we are learning from states that are. For example, North Carolina is county administered, and we're learning a lot from them. And we have regular meetings with them. My team has regular meetings with North Carolina and how they're implementing things. And so we are taking the time to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Payoin. And as a former vendor for those, or contractor for those services, the greatest thing about governments is they all talk and all speak. The worst thing about your governments is they all talk and they all speak. So I appreciate that. The dual voice, right? Making sure, verify what they tell you from the customer, what's really happening. So appreciate it. Senator Wicklund, follow up?
Yeah, the other question I had was, Commissioner Johnson, I think you, in the beginning, you talked about we had to make, DHS had to make changes due to changes in COVID, in terms of how we handle Medicaid, and that generated, you know, a lot of changes in the system. And I know that, you know, coming out of some of these processes will have to be changed again. Is that something, or can you talk about how you organizationally, do you have different teams that work on sort of enrollment or eligibility issues like that, that are more, I guess, coming sooner, and then, you know, other teams are working more in the future oriented. Can you just talk about how we are able to adapt and make these changes as necessary, you know, to deal with, you know, specific things that come up like that. Thanks.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wicklund, I appreciate that question. It's actually a challenge to do the additional work, whether it's new work or whether it's work that was driven by the pandemic, at the same time that we're doing the ongoing operational work. And that's part of the reason why we're requesting more resources, is in order to have the resources to be able to put to the newer work. Mr. Palin could probably address this more directly than I could, but during the course of the pandemic, for instance, we put a number of projects on hold because we had to divert resources off of those projects, which were system improvement projects, and have those folks work on pandemic response related issues. As far as the forward-looking goes, yes, in particular, the unwinding of the public health emergency requirement around Medicaid eligibility, which required us to essentially keep people continually enrolled on Medicaid. There are a few exceptions to that, but generally keeping people continually enrolled. We have to start going back after the public health emergency is done at the federal level, going back to starting to then do those and renewal again. And that's a large process that's going to take a lot of resources. And we are in process of planning that now, planning that both from an IT perspective, how we're going to do it, but also from a business process perspective, how we're going to do it. And I know that, the counties and the tribes have a huge role in that piece as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Senator Wicklund, any follow-up?
No, it does seem like that's going to be adding another layer of complexity and requires, you know, people and resources to be able to do that work, because some of it will be, you know, we'll be required to do it. And we want to also see these modernization efforts go forward. So I think that just impacts the number of resources needed. And I wanted to see if that was taken into consideration. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Commissioner Johnson, one of the Gartner studies, or one of the Gartner's recommendations, were to create a team who's going to be responsible for the implementation of the roadmap. Can you give us the status of it? Is that team formed? And who does that team report to? Commissioner Johnson?
Mr. Chair, we put in place a couple of things. One is that we put in place a leadership team that is guiding the roadmap development as we go forward. We have also worked with Gartner around the design of what's called product office, which I think is what you're referring to, the group that would actually lead through this process. And we're now at the point, having had those specifications from Gartner, we're about ready to get the office, start getting the office put in place, probably starting with an interim director. That was a recommendation from Gartner. And then have that office start to build itself going forward. Again, this is to focus us in on eligibility and enrollment and how we change the way we're working, including moving toward a more agile and product approach. I'd also mention on that latter point, though, and maybe Mr. Palin could address that, that Mr. Palin started with his team at least a year ago and brought us into it on that transformation from project to product. And we're getting down the road on that work. And I think Mr. Palin could share more about that because we're ahead of where other state agencies are right now and working with Minute Central on that, this as well. So if it'd be okay if Greg could speak to that.
Excellent. Mr. Palin?
Mr. Chair, as you were saying and some of the other senators were saying, we're on a multi-year journey here, moving from a project approach to a product approach. And it completely aligns with the Gartner recommendations. I would argue that that's what Gartner has recommended. And really what this is it's reorientating and it's going to be a culture change. It's going to be tough for us to do and a challenge, but I just in simple words, it's the way to go. It's what is happening throughout technology to deliver services faster and more efficient and more from a person-centered approach. It's the approach to take and kind of in a little way that COVID kind of helped us get there a little bit because we had to be a little quicker in delivering services. And it really engages people that we serve. And the MM benefits application we were just talking about a few minutes ago and some of the questions you were asking, I kind of wanted to jump in and I thought I better wait. But what Code for America did is they went out and they interviewed actual participants in the programs and got information from them and understood simple things like, hey, I want to be able to use my phone to talk to the Department of Human Services. And so what we did then with that is we did not boil the ocean. We started with just a couple programs and now, whoops, surprise, we got 9 programs on this. And we used to have an application called Apply MN, which was 2 or 3 programs, took people over an hour to enter. It's gone. We retired it last month. No complaints. This approach, I think, is the future. Some of you are a part of the BRC. I had a conversation with Tom Butterfield over 2 years ago now, and he kind of got me engaged in that, and we met with a lot of people. And I just think it's the right way to go, to the point about providers and getting the providers involved and engaged, which we haven't started with that. We're going to, as we go through this product approach and we do this incrementally and make changes incrementally, we're going to have to build user profiles for the providers. And how do we do that? By talking to the providers, by having them engaged, by having them test what we're doing. I'm kind of rambling here a little bit, but that's the approach we need to do.
Mr. Palin, yeah, I appreciate it. You haven't, I don't think we've ever met, but you haven't heard the Quran rant for the last 6 years. And so it's not a discovery. The rest of the world's been doing this all the time. And so we're now looking at it, and it's consumer-centered, whatever new buzzword we talk about. And even in your statement is that, wow, you know, we went out and asked people, really? And it's not just about asking. I've done large integrated systems, state disbursement units, you know, around the country, you know, RFPs that are 2,000 pages long. My point is that it's exactly where we need to be, and we should have been there years ago, and including our own internal business processes and how we collect and gather that expert knowledge on a continuous basis. Why do you exist? And why does everybody exist in the entire life cycle? It's a complicated mess. When you look at MMIS hands you a bunch of burdens with 60 cents of our dollars and then expects you to deliver 100% value. And then it goes to your agency, and then it goes to DHS County. And then there's a whole slew, thousands of vendors that depend on that, what's left of that tiny little dollar, and then a whole pile of rules and burdens that are placed upon them, typically with little consideration. And so it's not about getting people to ask, because most people, you could ask them, what do you want? Well, you know, that's gonna be relative. Could they articulate it? Not in many cases. It's literally sitting down and watching and doing the actual work, because you'll find the nuances that just you can't articulate, and it doesn't come across in a work group. We bring our stakeholders, what, pick every metaphor we've all used for 20 years. You really got to do the job, and you really have to, not all the time, but you need to understand that, because only then can you truly have the collaborative environment that they know what the heck you can offer them and you know what they can offer you. And that's through that entire complex life cycle. So that's what we're looking for. And again, we'd love nothing more than to see those things happen. And some of us are volunteer, we'd like to see it happen. And you need to highlight that, because to me, without that, our IT and all of those challenges continued down the same path that we've had. So I appreciate your enthusiasm, Mr. Paling, because it's where we need to go. And I'll be an enthusiastic partner walking right alongside you. And you know, you always see some legislation for me pushing. We've got to attach every single person that exists in your agency to understand why their job exists in the entire complex life cycle in which you have to manage it. So I appreciate the comments. So I do have a couple more questions. I think Mr. Jorgensen talked about the $77 million ask and then freeing up the resources. I'm sorry. There's some federal resources out of that $77 million in the total ask. How many federal dollars do you think will be associated or available based on the efforts in which you've got mapped out for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe our estimate is that we would be able to leverage an additional $107 million in federal funds. I will say that is an estimate, and it's a complex formula based on our reimbursement with the different federal agencies that we would partner with. But I believe the estimate is an additional 107 million federal dollars.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Clarify, 170 or 107?
Mr. Chair, 107.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. And so with that, members, we do have one additional testifier. So if we have 15 minutes left. So if Mr. Radke, if you could step up to the testifier table, and then once you get situated, please state your name, your position, and who you're with. Ms. Radke.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Radke. I'm Director of Partner Relations and Strategic Initiatives with Dakota County Community Services. I am here on behalf of MICA, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and MAXA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Services Administrators. Thank you for allowing this time to share the county perspective on modernization and on the DHS service delivery transformation legislative proposal just presented. Counties have long provided leadership and advocacy for modernizing and transforming human services technology, processes, policy, and practice. Principles important to this work include serving families holistically while empowering individuals to determine their own priorities, goals, and services. In order to do that, we need to break down rigid program silos and processes and provide a more integrated service delivery experience that focuses on personalized outcomes and reduced administrative burden to clients and county staff. Modernized technology and tools are essential. In support of this vision, counties have participated in the recent Gartner work as described and shared by DHS colleagues. I'd like to call out that the Gartner report acknowledges that human services are delivered in Minnesota through an ecosystem of people, technology, and processes, not only at DHS and Minute, but also at counties and tribal nations. Counties support the recommendations laid out in the final Gartner report, and in particular, the recommendations to leverage best of breed software and to adopt an enterprise-wide, agile and iterative development methodology. We agree that these recommendations are essential to our success going forward. As we move forward with this work, I'd like to share a number of county concerns and priorities. First, we need to improve county and tribal access to data contained in state systems. This includes modernized data governance and joint accountability for compliance. Access to this data is essential for counties to be able to evaluate and administer services. Future development also requires an interoperability framework to ensure that state, county, and tribal technology practices will work together seamlessly to deliver services. Again, a key point in the Gartner report is that human services technology does not stop at DHS. Counties have invested a lot of infrastructure and technology, necessary infrastructure and technology, in order to efficiently deliver these services, and they all need to work together. And to that end, it is also critical to ensure that sufficient resources for county and tribal development and change management processes for all modernization initiatives. Counties and tribes are integral to the success of any initiative, and it is important that those local efforts are resourced with state and federal modernization funding. To date, we have received very little modernization funding with the federal match, and we are a very important component in like half of that entire ecosystem to deliver these services. As we move forward with this product development approach, it is also important that we define the products for development through consensus with counties and tribes. And it is also important that we consider all operational aspects at the county and tribal level as we move forward with this product development. Also, as we consider specific modernization pilots going forward, counties have prioritized the following. We too would like to continue with the next phase of the MN benefits development. And I think Deputy Commissioner Johnson and Greg Paling did a good job of going through that. We too are very pleased with how the development process evolved this last year and is a good representation of that agile methodology. But as part of that iterative process, it's the first step. We need to connect that application to Maxis and to really deliver more efficiency to both clients and staff. We also would like to see a development of we call it a social needs, a more holistic front-end social needs tool and screening tools that link to MN benefits as well as community resources. And we think that is really essential to pushing more of that self-service and self-determination really up front. How do we, again, empower people to see what it is that they really need, and not in program lingo, but we're talking just like social needs. What do we need? Do we need help with food? Do we need help with housing? And what is that array of resources? Government as well as community that can help people out and help direct people to those resources. We also need to fund county initiatives that seek to improve the client experience and staff efficiencies. We have a lot of ideas regarding use of data and case management at the county level. And we feel that we are in the best position to lead those initiatives, but again, still in collaboration with DHS tribes and MNIT. So again, it goes to, we really need to transform not just our system, but how we approach this work, how we fund this work, and how these partnerships work. And counties have a significant role to play in that. We also would like to see continued prioritization of METS improvements, but again, using that agile methodology, how do we bring some of these recommendations from Gartner to our current issues? And lastly, we know we need to maintain our legacy systems, and it's imperative for counties that they operate as efficiently as possible while we modernize technology. We need to continue to prioritize investments to the SSIS, our social services system that we are heavily reliant on, METS and Min Choices systems, which have each added significant county workload challenges over the last several years. So we cannot lose sight of those issues as well. So again, thank you for the opportunity to share the county perspective on this work, and I too stand for any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Radke. And I think as many of us senators do, we go sit with our county staff and sit through an eligibility, right? And talk about what's the day in your life look like. And you, what you also didn't highlight too is you are the front end, you are the forward facing entity of all DHS services, and to not only the vendor community, right? Access to that vendor community. Almost everything we do is provided by a vendor community, but to individuals themselves. So it brings a level of accountability that I don't know that it's appreciated all the time. And then what the inefficiencies are to you, if you think they're bad, or the outcomes that you feel you're not fully integrated in having the voice and the tools that are handed to you in that entire life cycle. But how do we think the vendor community that takes care of the most vulnerable in our society? Those are the things that we have to work on. So that's why, you know, I'll never stop until I think we can have a lot of fun I know you're a government entity, but when the other government entity shows up, DHS, by the way, all you guys, show up to learn your job and walk by side by side. But truly that we're not only here to help, but we are here to learn what you do, why you do it. Cultures change every 20 miles as a populace. Mm-hmm. The business processes change everywhere you go in every government entity. And then it gets more complex when you move to the private sector, you know, because remember the private sector is the bottom line. And so, and those are their most critical services. They're doing the work. And so we need to figure out how does that automation enhance and benefit everybody in that life cycle? So, and with the tools, I'm a fan, you guys. So we have supercomputers. We've talked to Commissioner Tomes and Commissioner Johnson. You know, I believe that we probably, very few transactions that we couldn't automate today. Our consumers and customers know their needs far better than we give them credit for. So we will do everything we can to make sure that the collaboration continues, not in a traditional sense, but in a truly collaborative environment where everybody's learning each other's job. Because only then you can share what you know and how much you could benefit and enhance and improve the process. Same with DHS. The ability that what you can offer and access to information, how we do one process or another, to truly improve the outcomes. And I truly believe we can have a lot of fun at the same time. So I think we have one question. I think I see Senator Wicklund's hand up, even though I don't have my glasses on. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate hearing from Ms. Radke, and I am glad that she's laid out kind of the key priorities for the counties. And I don't really have a question. I definitely would like to see more information provided about, you know, how do we make sure that these priorities are kind of intertwined with the priorities that DHS has brought forward. And then I think it raises another big question for me is how do we gauge the resources needed to do this work? Because we don't have necessarily at the legislature as much visibility into county budgets and how the counties are budgeting for IT modernization efforts. And I imagine that, you know, there's a lot of counties, or there's a lot of a mixture of capabilities across counties. So how do we gauge how to implement this type of work at the county level that's needed? I definitely agree that they need to be a partner and be able to work on these efforts, but how do we gauge the resources available and whether we need to help as a state to supplement some of those budgets to make these things happen. I don't know if Ms. Radke has a comment on that or not, but thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Ms. Radke.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Wicklund. Yes, I do have a response on that. And many of the technology implementations at the county levels have had been developed due to lack of functionality with state systems, and that the state technology infrastructure really didn't go far enough to take care of all of the needs, particularly around case management. It's that frontline work, and you know, things like scheduling clients, customer contact, just, you know, where it's really where that rubber meets the road. And we've had to develop many of those solutions, leveraging county levy, you know, local property taxpayer dollars to implement these state programs. So a significant priority is how do we bring down and leverage state modernization funds, particularly since we're able to get federal match to, I think, more realistically and holistically recognize all that is needed to implement these programs, not just the back-end systems that Mr. Paling and my DHS colleagues went through, and those are critically important, but that whole ecosystem all the way through to the counties and leverage some of that funding. We are more than willing to do our part. We have been doing our part for a very long time, but we would like to see some additional funding for these programs. And if I may as well, we have been, I'd like to share that counties have been working over the last, I'd say 2 years, very intentionally on how can we share information on how we're doing things. We recognize that doing things 87 different ways is neither an efficient way of doing things. And as we talk about these solutions, there's commitment and interest and energy to pool our resources and work together very cohesively amongst ourselves, as well as with DHS on this work going forward.
Thank you, Ms. Radke. I think one of the things that you spoke of is you guys do a great job. And my experience is the how you work together. My understanding too is I think the counties have five different document imaging management systems across the state, and you spend considerable amount of resources for a very transient population printing and sharing and mailing information across to all of the counties as they move and you go through eligibility changes. And so we need to look at those. I would like to see if you could provide, you have your priorities, if you could provide that to the committee administrator so we can distribute it. But then the hidden tax, the hidden cost, you just talked about, that burden is borne on your local taxpayers and through the levy. And so the more ineffectiveness that is pushed down, that you have to then absorb that in the local counties, taxpayers have to pay for it. Those are things that I don't think people understand the true cost. We measure what we get from CMS, we measure what you get handed down and from the DHS and the state level, but we don't look at that total cost and what portion of your levy is due to these changes or the ineffectiveness that's pushed upon you. So members, with that, I see no further hands and it is 10 o'clock. No more business before us. We will adjourn the Technology Reform Committee. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Commissioner Johnson and all your team.
Thank you.